Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. We want to welcome those of you who just logged on to the Metron Live podcast, coming to you live from Metron in historic Midtown Atlanta. Metron people, give the podcast people a big hand. We welcome you. I am really excited about this series. Let me go ahead and show you the title. It is Consciousness and Visualization, Finding a Practical Roadmap for the Fourth Dimension. Now, you know, in quantum physics, they tell us that there could be 11, there could be 18, there could be infinite numbers of dimensions. Many of you are familiar with the idea of the multiverse, that there are parallel realities. I've talked about all this kind of thing. Typically or specifically, when we talk about the fourth dimension, we're talking about the spirit realm beyond three dimensions. When we talk about something as three-dimensional, it means it has height and width and depth. Like we're looking, living in a three-dimensional world. Fourth dimension means there's a reality, a spirit reality, beyond what we perceive in the material realm. Paul said the seen things are temporal, the unseen things are eternal. So there's something in all of us. You know, I've mentioned several of you have lost loved ones, and when you look at the body of where your loved one lived, you feel some attachment to it because that's how you knew that person. But also, when you look at him, you realize that's not them. It's really kind of a rite of passage in grief when you look at the body that someone lived in. And it's, you know what it's like? It's like driving by a house your grandmama used to live in, and you have memories of it, and you feel kind of a connection to it. But that's, grandma didn't live there anymore. You know what I mean? It's like you feel a detachment to it. And it's because we are more real on the inside than we are on the outside, and you know all this. Why are we talking about consciousness and visualization? Well, I believe that visualization is important. I've seen something. I'm going to talk a little bit about Abraham this month. And as much as I've talked about Abraham in my 46 years of ministry, I've seen some things this week that I honestly didn't know that I knew. And so I want to share these things with you. And I've got so much to say, I just want to get into it. Let me go ahead and show you this verse of Scripture. This is Genesis chapter 13, verses 14 through 7, and I'm in the Amplified Classic. Now, I taught out of this just a few months ago, but I want to go back and visualize this because I've seen this in a way that I was seeing in a mirror dimly. Now I'm seeing a little more clearly. It says, "The Lord said to Abram, after Lot had left him, 'Lift up now your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward, for all the land which you see,'" remember that word, "'I will give to you and to your posterity forever, and I will make your descendants live in a small area in the Middle East known as Israel that will become a nation in 1948. Is that what it says? No, it says, "I will make your descendants like the dust of the earth, so that if a man could count the dust of the earth, then could your descendants also be counted. Arise, walk through the land, the length of it and the breadth of it, for I will give it to you." Now, let me just give you a little refresher course. There's so much in this verse. The first thing is, lift up your eyes and look from the place where you now are. So that, if I didn't tell you anything more than that, that would be worth you getting in the car and driving over here today. Because as long as you're looking at what is, it is a cyclical thing. Like you see it, you internalize it, and then you, for lack of a better term, regurgitate it. It's like you keep seeing the same thing, you keep saying the same thing, you see it, you say it, you say it, you see it. It's just like this. You keep creating the same reality. I don't want to split hairs with anybody over the literalness of the Bible stories. The fact is, the Bible stories are very powerful just from an allegorical sense. The idea of Israel going around Sinai for 40 years, that's very symbolic to us about just continuing the same pattern in your life, doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. And the promised land becomes symbolic of getting out of that. Even, you know, I'm partial to the song choices that Marshall shares, but even just singing that Bob Dylan song, "Any Day Now I Shall Be Released," that he didn't even know what I'm talking about today, and that's such a confirmation to where I'm going with this month. I'm being released from this pattern. I'm being released of just keeping the same thing over and over again. The same thing keeps happening in relationships. Same thing keeps happening in jobs. Same thing keeps happening with my finances. It's just so predictable. This is the way I am. I keep prophesying my own future and then walking into it. I keep painting this picture of who I want to be, and then like Bert and Mary Poppins, I jump into the chalk drawing that I've made on the sidewalk, and I recreate it. So he says to Abram, lift up your eyes and look. Now here, this is key. I'm assuming you all know this. Abram was an old man. Sarah was an old woman. She was post-menopause. This is an adult group, but Romans 4 makes it clear that they had not been physical with each other in some time. In a very delicate way, Paul says in Romans, Abram wasn't even capable of that anymore. They were an elderly couple. And they get this promise that they're going to have a child. And it's absurd. You know that when her name was Sarai then, but when Sarai hears the angel say this, she laughs. She goes, what are you talking about? I'm not having a baby. and it took 25 years for it to manifest. Abram, because of their faith, his virility was returned to him before her ability to conceive was. He got it first. And because of that, are y'all okay with me? I mean, this is R-rated. But because of that, she says, well, why don't you, and this wasn't unusual for men who had harems, she said, I have a nubile young handmaiden named Hagar. Why don't you have a baby with her, and we will find a way to make this promise come to pass. And that's the reason we have Islam, the reason we have 9/11, the reason we have a terrorist list. All of that came from that one thing. Because after Hagar gave birth to Ishmael, what was he, 11 or 12, when Sarah, she started having a cycle again, and she could conceive. So then she gives birth to Ishmael's half-brother, Isaac. And at a certain point, Sarah's like, well, we don't need Hagar and Ishmael anymore, and cast her out. Everything that is in the Middle East was a product of this prophecy, because Hagar and Ishmael they're just out. He just kicks them out. But God gives them a prophecy, and he says, I'm going to make great nations out of you, and they'll be rich. And you know, you look at Dubai and some of these places, they are absolute fulfillment of the prophecy over Ishmael. And the reason, as recently as, 2 weeks ago, there's all this business of the embassy going back to Jerusalem and our current president saying that Jerusalem's the capital of Israel and not of Palestine, and there was bloodshed or whatever, and it will continue to go because Isaac and Ishmael are still at odds with one another. I love the nation of Israel. I've been there twice. I will go back. I'm pro-Israel, but I personally believe in a two-state solution. And when you've been there and you've talked to Palestinians who were there for centuries after the diaspora of AD 70, when Jews went all over the world and left that real estate there, when they came back in 1948, 1967, the Israelis just occupied and said, you know, you're, I mean, I've talked to people who said, you know, we were just kicked out of our house. I mean, this is where my family had lived for generations. And both the Jews and the Palestinians both have a holy book that says, this land is mine. The other one is saying, this land is mine. And when I used to work with the Global Peace Festival, we had Israelis and Palestinians together. I tell you what's fun is when you're sitting at a table of guys that used to work with Arafat, and then you've got a Zionist who gets up and starts singing, "This land is mine. God gave this land to me." And I'm like, okay, please nobody shoot anybody. I'm just, you know, can we all get along? And I had, as I've told you, I had a chance to preach in Ramallah. And I was able to say to Palestinians, I said, you know, we're, believe it or not, we are of the same family. And Genesis 25 says that after Abram died, that his sons, Ishmael and Isaac, went and buried him together. And so when somebody says, did you celebrate Israel's 70th birthday the other day? No, I did not, because I've read Genesis. God's plan was the whole world is supposed to become the promised land. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, not a group of people who want to fight over a small piece of real estate in the Middle East. And I understand you want to have a homeland, but let me tell you something. Patriotism and nationalism are two different things. I'm a patriot, but I'm not a nationalist. I'm a citizen of the world. I love America, but I know that we're a part of a larger thing. And so I'm not anti-Israel. I'm certainly not anti-Semitic. But I also know that the idea was that everybody was supposed to become the chosen people. And so what he says to Abram is, lift up your eyes and look. This is what I want to get across to you that I don't think I've ever said before. The promise was so much bigger than this already impossible thing. Do you understand? Just saying you old people are going to have a baby, just that alone is impossible. You know, Sarai's name was changed to Sarah, which in Hebrew means young princess. I mean, it's kind of an insult for this old woman. When somebody says, what's your name? My name's Young Princess. Really? It's kind of an ironic name for an old woman. Oh, well, I'm not so young. I'm not so old. Abraham just went to CVS and picked me up a little something because I'm a young princess. I mean, I'm trying to make a point here about how absurd this was. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you don't know what I'm saying, somebody needs to explain the birds and the bees to you. Let's just say Abram hadn't made that run in many, many years. Y'all got it? All right. But here's what I want to get across to you about consciousness. God gives him this promise, and they're like, oh my God, they're looking at this amazing thing, this promise. Last week, I told you I reposted this video about that Judah had made about the history, the legacy of Church in the Now. We had to work on it a little bit because some of the music on there had some copyright issues. And somebody said this to me, and it actually, and if she's watching, I mean this in the best possible way, it surprised me that this person said this to me. Because this is someone who took the ending of Church in the Now very personally, very hard, and has not been able to move on. Y'all okay? I'm telling you, I did not drink a Bloody Mary this morning, but I'm just like, I don't have a filter today, so I'm just saying it all. But she even said this to me, and it was one of those, you ever had somebody say something to you, and you're like, whoa, that's what I believed, but now that you said it, it's made it even more real. She said, I'm looking at all those prophecies spoken over you at Church in the Now, because there's a lot of them on that video. And she says, I realize now they're about so much more than we thought they were about. Because when we heard these prophets, because Church in the Now was amazing. I'm sorry, I'm not just saying it because it was mine. That was an amazing thing that we did there in Conyers. Nobody can ever take that away from us. But it was like God saying to Abram and Sarai, you're going to have a baby. And they're like, we got to figure out how to have this baby. Sometimes the prophecies give you tunnel vision. And you think it's about a baby or a mega church in Metro Atlanta. And then God has to say, no, lift up your eyes and look from this prophecy. Yeah, but this is amazing. God, do you not realize how amazing this would be for old people like us to have a baby? And he says, no, you're fixating on a smaller thing. Get your eyes off, as amazing it is as it is, get your eyes off this because you're fixating on having an heir, and my plan for you is that your descendants will be numbered like the dust of the... He said, can you count the dust? That's what your descendants are. Would it be amazing to have a baby? Would it be amazing to build an amazing church? Would it be amazing to have prophecies fulfilled? Yeah, it would. But lift up your eyes and look from that because you're lowballing it. You're aiming too low. Listen to me. You're aiming too low just by holding on to the promise. God gives you the promise and he says, it's more than the promise. Yeah, but we're going to have a baby. No, your descendants are going to be the dust of the earth. You're thinking baby, I'm thinking everybody. And that's even, I read what Denise had written to me. She said, I was crying looking at the majesty of what Church of the Nail was. And then to transition to see you on a beach, it's like you have so much more acreage now. That wasn't exact words, but she was saying that was amazing. But now it's like you've inherited the earth. Instead of 43 acres, now it's the ocean. And I was like, I was thinking that. But I was waiting for somebody to say it. In the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word is established. What we've been taught is you get that prophecy and you hold on to that prophecy and you don't forget it. You write it on the tablets of your heart and you transcribe it and you look at the prophecy, look at the prophecy, look at the prophecy. Do you see how looking at the prophecy becomes counterproductive? Lift up your eyes and look away from the prophecy. Yeah, but I was in this service and this guy called me out. And he went, lift up your eyes and stop listening to the tape of that because you're getting fixated on a 30-fold return when I'm trying to give you a 100-fold return. So here in 13, he says, lift up your eyes, try to count the dust. Fast forward two chapters. In 15, verse 5, also in the Amplified Classic, and he brought him outside his tent. Now, I'm not just trying to talk dirty to you, but don't you think it's kind of interesting that he says, get out of the tent? If you're trying to conceive a baby, y'all with me? Get out of the tent, turn off the Barry White music. Yeah, but God, you said we were going to have a baby. We got to get busy. That's where babies come from. Y'all hear me? I mean, you got to get this. Maybe this was after night after night after night after night of being in the tent. Because we got to have a baby. We got to have a baby. We got to have a baby. This is how babies are born. God promised us a baby. And we're rediscovering this part of our youth that we haven't had in years. So, yeah, this is great. Woohoo! Promise of God is better than Viagra. This is awesome. I mean, again, I'm not trying to be crude. I'm just, you've got to get this. Because this is a part of it I didn't see before. Because usually when I've talked about him get out of the tent, I'm thinking of it just being the canopy over his face, which there is a truth to that. But now I'm saying, wow, that's really interesting that he says, get out of that bedroom where you're trying to make this prophecy come to pass. And I love the way it says it here in the Amplified. It says, and he brought him outside his tent into the starlight. Now, I know I'm a child of the 60s, but you know one of the... I always loved the musical Hair. I just did. I know it's got a nude part in it, but I love Hair. I love Aquarius. I love all of it. But you know what my favorite song in it is? Good morning, starshine. The earth says hello. You twinkle above us. We twinkle below. And it sounds like he's speaking in tongues. Doobie doobie doobop. Doobie doobie dooba. La lo la lo. And there's just something really cool about that song. It's like, what are they doing? Why are they singing the weird, like they're singing the language of the stars. And he brought him outside his tent into the starlight and said, look now toward the heavens. What? Do you notice a pattern here? Try to count the dust. Can you count dust? No. Then he says, try to count the stars. Can you count stars? No. You're fixating on having a baby. I'm trying to make all of the nations of the world part of your family. And you shall all the nations of the world be blessed. And please, no evangelicals or fundamentalists write me hate mail on this. I'm telling you. Zionists, I know their heart's in the right place. But I've been doing this a long time, and when I see some of these, I won't say any names, but some of these churches where they call themselves Friends of Israel, and they've got Jewish people, and they're doing Jewish dances, and they're all, you know, celebrating the nation of Israel. I want to say to the Jews there, I don't think you understand what they think about you. They think, according to their interpretation of Scripture, they think a third of you are going to be killed in a war, and the rest of you are all going to hell. So I know y'all are acting like y'all are big buddies, but they all think y'all are going to hell. Is that me? What is that? I tell you what will really blow your mind when you go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. There's a place you go into that shows that Hitler came from the same hometown that Martin Luther came from. Martin Luther, the reason we have Protestants, the reason there is a Protestant church beyond the Roman Catholic Church, is Martin Luther, you know, he has this thesis of 95 things that he nails on the Wittenberg door, so he protests the Roman Catholic Church, and that's where the Lutheran Church came from, and which we got Presbyterians, and y'all have Lutheran back. Lutheran liturgy is very similar to Catholic liturgy, but it's Protestant, okay? And when he did that, he believed that all the Jews were going to be saved. He thought there was going to be a great revival. When that didn't happen, he turned on them and said they should all be annihilated. It was just in the early 90s, it was taken off the Lutheran books, the Lutheran philosophy that the Jews were like reprobates and we're all going to perish. Hitler thought he was a Christian. White supremacists think they're Christians. The Ku Klux Klan, they think they have a white God and a white Jesus, and that they are, and they've got their little scriptures out of Genesis to, because they think, according to their skewed interpretation, that Ham, because he had some kind of homosexual relationship with his father, was cursed, and he became the first black man. That's just not true. That's not at all what that story's about. But slavery, all of it came from that. If you wonder, how could those white Christian churches have endorsed slavery, and even now, I mean, there's some of the stuff I've read this week on Facebook from people that I've known for years and know their ministry that are supporting racist ideology. I'm like, what has happened to you? My God, are you kidding me? You're really defending that? You can't tell there's a difference between somebody just saying something vulgar and somebody saying that an African-American woman looks like an ape? You can't tell. You don't see a difference in that, really? And you think that's spiritual warfare? Oh, my God, what happened to you? You know, there's a word called Ichabod that, you know, was put over churches, said the glory has departed from them. I'm like, give me some spray paint. I-C-H-A-B-O-D. Like, are you kidding me? How do you not know the difference? Well, this political correctness, you don't even know what you can say. Yeah, you should know the difference. It's like men who say, well, I don't even know what to say to women now. Come on. There's a difference between saying, wow, you look really great today, and if you don't have sex with me, I'm going to fire you. You can't tell there's a difference? Really? That's all the same to you? Really? So he says, come out of the tent, look into the starlight, and said, look toward the heavens. Count the stars if you were able to number them. Then he said to them, so shall your descendants be. I didn't post anything when Israel celebrated their 70th birthday the other day. And again, I love Israel. I will go back. I would take y'all on a trip to Israel. It's a very interesting trip. I love it. I've just read this. God's plan wasn't to just have a nation. It was to have people. I mean, I know I speak passionately about this, but I grew up with this stuff. I grew up, every decision I ever made was based on Israel becoming a nation. The reason I never made plans past 30, the reason I never came out as a young man is I thought, well, we're going to be out of here in 1988 because that's the 40th, that's what I was taught. That's the 40th anniversary. It's a generation. Jesus said, this generation shall not pass until these things come to pass. So it'll have to be, you know, in 1988. I know this, I'm speaking Greek to some of y'all. You never heard this. Some of us grew up with this every week of our lives. And I'm telling you, first time I went to Israel, I heard people saying, oh, just to walk where Jesus walked. I remember getting out of the airport in Tel Aviv and thinking, where is it? I don't feel it. And this is back many years ago. I'm like, it was cool. It was beautiful. I was very interested in whatever historic sites they think are. Most historic sites have a Catholic church on them, so it's kind of hard to get your head around what this looked like initially. But I got it. I mean, I went to the place where supposedly was the empty tomb, and you go in there and you're like, okay. And I kept, you know, I heard people say, oh, when I got there, I thought, I am home. I thought, I never got that. Let me show you how to walk where Jesus walked. I'm in the Holy Land. I'm in the Promised Land. I'm in heaven. No, in heaven we're going to walk in streets of gold. Well, that's fine. I can tell you, I've had some miracles happen lately that I think, oh, there's at least a gold brick. Might not be a full road, but like, wow, that was... I'm telling you, every time somebody says, I don't know why, I just wanted to give this to you, I'm like, well, there's another brick in the road. Praise the Lord. Goodbye, yellow brick road, where the dogs of society howl. All right, what's he saying to Abram? Look up from the place where you now are. Come out of the tent. Look up at the starlight. The reason I'm talking about these two words this month, consciousness and visualization, I want to say this to every one of you. Stop aiming too low. Stop settling for less. Stop being all excited over the prophecy when the prophecy is just a means to an end. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that whole thing about somebody prophesying over you. I was watching, we watched pretty much the whole season of American Idol, and you know, I've known Katy Perry's parents for years, and they were very prophetic. And then all of a sudden, on the Mother's Day issue, I look up, there's Mary's on the, you know, she's given a word. And I thought, wow, that's kind of amazing. And I mean, they came out of that whole prophetic thing. That's how I knew them. That's how I met Jane Russell. That's all that. I know I'm name dropping, but I'm just letting you know. And I said this about when you listen to everything that Katie says, and she's off the wall, but everything she says to those American Idol people, it sounds like a prophecy. She doesn't say, you sing well. She says, I think you were destined for, I mean, it's like she can't get away from it. It's in her DNA. But those of us who came out of that prophetic thing, anytime the prophet was in the house, you're like, come on, give me a word, give me a word. Everybody wants that word. And I used to notice back when we were like really into that, like as soon as somebody got called out, they weren't even listening. They were just so happy to be chosen. They weren't even listening what the guy was saying. I used to see this all the time, like, come here, let me give you a word. And the person would go, and I would be like, you're going to miss the word. You're too caught up in the emotion of it. Wait and hear what he's got to say. That's why if you ever notice me on those videos and somebody's prophesying over me, I'm honed in on them. I'm making eye contact like, what you got? This better be good. I may fall out in a minute, but not until you get through. What else you got? And I ain't got, so all these people that just immediately were out under the power, like, get up, you're missing the prophecy. This guy's giving you this amazing prophecy, and you're like, I was chosen. This is what's wrong with you. You don't listen. Somebody says, I got a word for you. I'm like, say on. Like what? And I get very quiet. Let me hear what you have to say. That's mutual here. The other night, y'all told me about a personal situation you got going through, and I said, I don't know how this will happen, but a blessing will come out of this. And initially, it doesn't look like a blessed thing. Initially, it looks as absurd as telling Abram and Sarah they're going to have a baby. Please tell me you're getting this. When you get the prophecy's not enough. The prophecy is a sneak preview. The prophecy is a roadmap to the fourth dimension. Look at this. Dr. Dispenza says, we are creatures of habit. We think somewhere between 60 to 70,000 thoughts in one day, and 90% of those thoughts are exactly the same ones we had the day before. Now, I'm going to tell you something. My mom deals with Parkinson's, and she keeps believing she's going to be healed of it. Now, I know personally, like, well, I just get quiet when she says it, because I don't want to take her hope away. But you know what? I'm happy that she's hoping for that. I would much rather her say, they're going to find a cure, or I'm going to get a breakthrough, or whatever. I'm still saying, take your prescription or whatever. But yeah, sure, there might be another thought. Instead of thinking the same one. And everybody, she's got friends who send her all this information about Parkinson's. She says, I don't want to read it. I said, don't read it. It's not going to make, look, reading up on a disease ain't going to make you feel any better. It's not. All you're going to hear is horror stories. Like, oh my God, that's what happened? You know how that is when you tell somebody you got something, oh, my uncle just died of that. Like, thank you, I don't need to. You know what I was amazed? In both of my previous marriages, you don't hear that from a minister very much. But I was very involved in the childbirth process and the pregnancies or whatever. I was amazed, both with Terry and Debbie, I was amazed at how many people would come up and tell them horror stories about pregnancy. And I think, why are you doing this? I mean, just horrible stuff. I got to where I would just be like, could you shut that down right now? Because one thing is, all four of my children came out of awesome pregnancies. I mean, I spoke over them, and I'm not just taking credit for it. Their mothers were healthy women. But I'm saying, I just would not entertain that. I'm like, no. Even when Mom would tell about my horrible birth, I'd be like, Mom, that was your story. That's not ours. Well, you're just in denial. Mom, some people say, you're just in denial. No, I'm not in denial. I know that it's out. Look, let me explain to you how this works. When I get in a car, I fasten my seatbelt. When I do that, I'm acknowledging that sometimes cars hit other cars and people have car accidents and they die. But I still drive my car. Do you understand? For a second, I go, click. I'm acknowledging reality. I'm not going to, you know, drive 100 miles an hour, go, la, 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 I can't hit anything. No, I'm aware, click. But then I go ahead and drive, and I'm not going to drive in fear. At night, before I go to sleep, I turn the lock on my door. I'm acknowledging that there might be somebody out there who would like to enter my house. I don't want them to enter tonight. But I'm not going to stand there at that door all night long going, oh, my God, are they out there? Are they out there? Do you understand? So I'm not telling you to be in denial. If the doctor tells you to take medicine, I'm not telling you to go flush your medicine. I do think we're all on too much medicine, though. I do think that. I've weaned off nearly everything lately because I'm just like, you know, that's my journey. I'm not telling you not to. But when I started working out again and being more active, I thought, I'm not going to take this blood pressure medicine. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not telling you not to. I'm saying this will be an impetus for me to get up off my butt to say, if I'm not going to take it, then I need to show up to that gym and do what the doctor said I'm supposed to do. Because it's just easier. I'm prophesying right now. It's just easier to go, well, I'll just pop this pill and see what's on TV. But when you're not taking stuff, you're like, no, you're 60 years old. Let's hop up. Let's get on a little treadmill. Because I remember when that doctor prescribed that to me, he said, if you would just lose a little weight and exercise more, I wouldn't have to put you on this. But it's just so much easier to go to CVS and get that prescription. I know, with most, I'm not anti-medicine, but honestly, everything they show on TV, the list of side effects are so long, I think I would just rather have the disease. I mean, some of the stuff, I'm like, are y'all kidding? It's like, how can it do all of that? Can cause constipation and diarrhea. I'm like, well, how? Which is it? Can give you chills and fever. Like, what? And I'm not telling you, do not go home and say, Bishop said to get rid of my man. I'm not telling you that. I'm saying, take as little as you possibly can. And even if you have to take it, say, this is temporary. I'm getting through this. I tell you, five of the most powerful words you will ever hear in the scriptures is, and it came to pass. So even if you're going through a rough patch physically, all right, this is a thing I'm going through right now, but it's a season, and I'm prophesying my own health to the other end of this. I'm not going to spend the rest of my life being like this. Because I'm going to tell you this, if I thought I was just going to have to completely medicate for the rest of my life and it was just going to pile on more and more, I think, well, then let me go on then. Because if that's all I'm going to do is just go from hospital to hospital, that's not abundant life. You make whatever choice you want to make, but for me, I would rather say, well, I had a good run, and, you know, I mean, I'm telling you, feeling good is important. I didn't plan on saying all that, but somebody's pulling on me strong today. But before I leave this, let me say, just sometimes another thought, just one different thought can change so much. Instead of having the same, look, if you just keep talking to the same people who are in the same boat with you and you feel worse after you talk to them and misery loves company, you got to get some new friends. Your friends are killing you. I mean, at some point you just got to say, baby, I love you so much, but I cannot have one more conversation with you. You're killing me. I can't. I got to talk to some people who will lift up their eyes and look. And if you don't say that, at least nip it in the bud. And when you see that number come up, you think, oh, crap. What you do is, I'm not going there. I'll answer this, but I'm not going to get sucked into the abyss. I'm not going to go into the dark vortex. their depression is not my depression. And I'll hear you, oh, I'm, yeah, it's going to get better. I love you. Okay, I got it. Okay, something's burning on the stove. Go ahead. Put something on the stove. Start it before you answer the phone so that you're not lying. And as a baby, I've got to go. There's something on the stove burning. Just keep you a little something beside the stove that you could just quickly put on that would be easy to extinguish in case it got out of hand. Don't set off your smoke alarms, but just keep a little something. And when, oh, crap, I got to put that on. Hey, what's up? Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Listen, I got something on the stove. Really? You had something on the stove last time I talked to you. I know. I've been watching the Food Network, and it just makes me cook, I cook, I cook. It's crazy, I know. I'm just a cooking fool lately. Gotta go. This Jonathan Lockwood Huey, I quote this guy a lot. He says, during his training, a baseball player strives to make each swing better than the last. The repetition of a faulty swing would be worse than useless. It would ingrain bad habits. The same is true of emotional responses. If we allow ourselves to continue to have the same angry responses, we just entrench our anger habit. But if we strive through consciousness, visualization, and coaching to moderate our anger response over time, we can train ourselves to respond to events as we choose without anger. You can't magically be free from anger tomorrow, but you can put yourself on your own training program that will reduce the frequency and intensity of your anger response day by day, year by year. I know that this is true. To just say, I'm making a choice, I'm never going to be angry again, that's nonsense. That's not even realistic. What you can do, and I did it as recently as yesterday. I was in a conversation with people who are very dear to me, but there's a place our conversation can go that it nearly went there two or three times, and I just reined it in. I just said, I wasn't obnoxious. I just said, you know, what I've learned at this stage, and they picked right up on it. That's what's amazing. You'd be surprised how much people want to do the right thing. And I just said, you know what, before we had that conversation, I want to just say blah, blah, blah. And they were like, yeah, you know what, you're exactly right. It's like it wasn't, and I didn't walk out of there going, ugh, where's some Listerine, I can't believe. You know, before you know it, you get pulled into that conversation with somebody. You understand what I'm talking about? I'm not talking about cussing and swearing. Honestly, cussing and swearing would be more productive than sitting around gossiping about some family member and saying the same thing that you've said a zillion times. And it's like what we were saying last week about watching the news, like being able to watch it with detachment. And I'm telling you, I don't think meditation is a panacea. I don't think it's the end-all, be-all. But I can tell you, just what little meditation we've done, I don't know if you can say this, but it's made a difference in me. And I can tell I'm not serene 100% of the time, but I am definitely serene adjacent nearly all the time. And I find myself, if I get pulled into stress, I'm like, okay, you know. Even something as easy as a breathing technique. Just like, all right, wait a minute. Hold it. You're just doing that three or four times. It's not a full-blown meditation, but it gets me out of that zone and back into, no, the power is in the serenity. The power is in the peace. The power is in the, it's just, I'm telling you, we are walking in that. Yeah, we're going to St. Simon's. Yeah, we're good. The great Voltaire said this, meditation is the dissolution of thoughts in eternal awareness or pure consciousness without objectification, knowing without thinking, merging finitude in infinity. This is the amazing thing about meditation, is when I say, you're not trying to think of anything. Well, I thought this is about visualization. It is. But you have to stop this before you can visualize out of here. And it takes a while just to turn your brain off. I'm telling you, if you don't even actually meditate, just go sit your butt on a beach and be quiet for a minute and look at the surf. Even that's valid. Or if you can't get to the beach, look at a lake or look at a swimming pool. There is something about looking at a body of water that is important. What Jackie was saying, you didn't hear him. He said when we were in Jekyll at the sunrise meditation, we walked out on the sandbar, which was really unusual. I mean, it looks like the Red Sea parting, and then watching it as the sun comes up is a whole other thing. And he said when I walked out there, I was emotional. I was crying, and he said I realized it was transitioning out of. And he can say this because Jack and Jackie were major supporters of church. I mean, up until the very end. I'm just telling you, at the very end when we were trying to save it, the Rogers and Debbie and I and y'all, several of us, I mean, we made a last-ditch effort out of our own savings. Let's try to keep this thing afloat. So when you say, I felt a personal connection to it, you did. It was I don't specifically baptize people anymore, but there is something about a water baptism that does end an old thing and start a new thing. And we had a baptismal service that morning. I wasn't dunking anybody, but you know what I mean? There's something about stepping into the water and making a decision. And I'm telling you, just what little... You know, I started meditation August of last year. We don't do it every Sunday, but we've done it a good bit. It's made a difference. I know that it has. I know that it has. And I've got another quote by this guy, Huey. He says, find a time and place of solitude. Look into the distance and into the future. Lift up your eyes and look from the place where you now are. Yeah, but God gave me this promise. I'm going to have a baby. Stop, look. Do you see how crazy that sounds? Stop looking at the thing God promised you. Because the promise is awesome. It's awesome having a baby. It's awesome building a great ministry. And God says, "This, I gave you this to show you that. This is that." I don't want to just milk the Jekyll thing, especially for those of you that didn't go, because I don't want you all to be like, "Dear God, if you don't shut up about Jekyll Island." And I don't feel that you feel that. I feel like everybody's so connected now that you... You said that, Mishana. You said, I felt like I was out there with you, which is exactly what I wanted. That was symbolic of a much larger thing. Well, that was just a trip to the beach. No, shut up. I hate you. That's not what it's about. That was about me saying, I don't have a lot of details. We're going to go to the beach. You have to figure it out. You got to find a way to pay for it and reserve. I'll see you there. I don't even know for sure what we're going to do. Give me your number. I'll put you on a group text. I'll tell you when you get there. That's kind of unheard of for 35 people. 35 people said, okay, what are we going to do? There was no struggle. Everybody got it. I didn't have to over-explain it. I didn't have one person going, well, what was that about? Everybody got it as soon as I said it. Well, is that about a trip? No, lift up your eyes and look from that. It's about a much bigger thing. Some of you have never thought this before, but what if I said, you know, I love Paris. Wouldn't it be cool to, why don't we, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to go to Paris and we'll go have lunch at the Eiffel Tower. Well, give me more to it. But I'm just saying, like right now, that sounds absurd on so many levels. But until you go to Jekyll Island, you would never go there. You understand? And if I never did international travel again, I'd be fine because it's kind of a pain. But my point is, it's a bigger thing. I'm happy to know y'all went to Machu. That's just kind of, that's really out there to go to Machu Picchu and the Galapagos. I'm glad to know that y'all did it because it keep in my mind, it keeps it in the realm of possibility. It's like, wow, that's kind of cool. If you look at Jeff and Marty, they're quiet, unassuming people. It's not like they're, you know what I mean? You would look at them and you think, well, he probably golfs and they probably, do you know what I mean? I mean, isn't that what you would think? You'd be like, well, they're a nice, upwardly mobile white couple. They're probably, you know, she probably gardens and they might. No, they're scuba diving in Fiji and going to Machu Picchu. Like, who the heck goes to Machu Picchu? I'm just so happy to know visionaries who would just go, yeah, let's do that. Because we all go with you. And it's constantly lifting up your eyes, lifting up your eyes, lifting up your eyes, lifting up your eyes. It's bigger. Remember I told you this years ago about, I said, you know why I don't like the baggage on the word prosperity. I have some issues with it. But the reason I do like, what you call it, abundance or whatever, I said, there should come a day where we have so much abundance that I could go to you and say, there's this family, lives down the street. They had a fire last week. They lost everything. They got nothing. Their kids, they got whatever. Can anybody take this? They're going to need about 50 grand to get them back on. And that any one of you could say, oh, I got this, and y'all be fighting over it. Like, no, you got the last one. I got this. Yeah, but you fed the orphans in Haiti the other day. Now, come on, I've got this one. And that's why even something as simple as doing an outreach every month, it's moving toward that. Look, I wouldn't have to, if I had never done that, and there's nobody on the board would have brought, there's not one person here would have said, should we be giving to St. Jude's Hospital? Like, no, nobody would have even thought of it. I don't think. But it's like, to me, it was a no-brainer. It's like, yeah, we've got to do that because it's moving us into a place. Let me say it to you this way. If you're just believing God to pay your bills, oh, you're settling for so much less. The point of prosperity is to be a blessing to mankind. I hope she doesn't mind me saying it. Frances just had a birthday. I don't give her stuff. She wants to give me something on her birthday. She goes, I know that sounds crazy. This, I don't know if she's crazy. But she said, I want to give on my birthday. I want to give. To me, the giving is the receiving. And I'm like, wow, that's very next level. I mean, it's very next level. Well, you can say that because you're the one that got the money. No, I'm saying that's very next level. Like, wow, that's a whole other way of thinking. And, yeah, she doesn't wait for birthday. Yeah, she does. But you know what that's like when you're like, oh, I got some bills to pay. Well, my birthday's coming up. I'll get some. You know, if that's what you're thinking, then you're aiming too low. Here's a thought. Every day ought to be your birthday. Every day ought to be Christmas. Every day ought to be New Year's. Every day should be a holiday. What? Every day should be Halloween. And every day should be done. No, shut up. Every day should be like. And it should be. And it is. I'm going to finish this. This is out of my translation, Mark in the Now. This is chapter 11, verse 23 and 24. Jesus says, let me reveal this truth to you. You're impressed with what happened to the fig tree, but the fact is that you have the power and the ability to say to this entire mountain, be lifted up and be thrown into the sea, and see it obey you. You've seen me actually speak to a storm or command the dead to live again. Well, in the same way, if you can connect the God kind of faith that is in your own heart with the creative ability that is in your own mouth, if you say what you believe and believe what you say, you can produce these kinds of results. This is why I am telling you, whatever you ask for in prayer, whatever you decree, believe. Accept the reality that it exists in another unseen dimension. Consciousness, visualization, lift up your eyes and look, count the dust, come out of the tent, stop looking at the top of the tent, look at the stars, walk into the starlight. Simply because you say it. Don't suspend or delay belief until you see it manifested in the physical realm, because what is unseen is more real than what is seen. Be confident that your request is granted to you and you will get it. Your own irresistible faith will attract it to you. The one thing, when I did that first meditation at Dr. Dispenza's conference, he says, when he got through, he said, now visualize what you want, but don't just see it. Think about the joy you would feel when it was manifested. Because it's the feeling, the anticipation. Remember how you used to feel about Christmas morning? You're just like, oh, I'm going to be so excited. Open those gifts. That's the way you should anticipate. Well, I don't want to aim too high. I might be disappointed. Shut up. You should expect every day to be like, oh my God, what's going to happen today? What's going to happen today? Anything could happen. Anything's possible. Let's all stand. I've kept you a really long time, so I'm not going to run the thing at the end. You know what to do. You know how to give. Give online. You've got the information. If you're making a check, make it to JESM, and Danny will be back there to receive it. If you have cash, pay it forward. Those of you that are here today for the first time, we welcome you. Hope you guys will come back. Loved having you all. I love your energy today. I love the countenance on your face. You're beautiful, special, wonderful people. You're just, every single one of you, you're just wonderful. And I love you, and I speak to your ability to visualize, and that it's just easy. I speak just an easy week, an easy day, that you're not in a hurry, you're not stressed, that you just enjoy it when you sit down at lunch today, whatever you have. If you're eating at the finest restaurant or you open a can of beans or whatever it is, you just enjoy every bite of it. You're grateful for it. I speak gratitude over you. I speak possibilities. I speak starlight over everyone here. I love you very much. Peace.